Hey yo, let's go. Welcome back to another episode of Weebcast, the number one anime and manga show on the internet with the host with the most, if I must say so myself, C-Dub. Yes it is, your fearless leader is back at it again with another episode with you. I hope you guys have been enjoying these last few episodes, especially the Spy Family review. I really enjoyed writing that one up. Definitely love doing that one, putting that out there. And I hope you'd like to. I hope you guys enjoyed my last two episodes with my boy, Chris. Not only that he shared my name, but he shared a lot of different things, in terms of just an anime opinions and some of the things we like, out of in anime and just in life in general, from drinks to snacks and views and a lot of different things. So not only I enjoyed our conversation with him, we're definitely going to do more episodes together, whether it be on his podcast, which he should have plugged at the end of one of the episodes, I'm recording this at a different time. So when this certain episode goes up and I do not have his stuff plugged on those previous episodes, let me know. Otherwise, Chris will probably let me know and I'll get that to you, because I definitely want to get that out in the ether. But for today, we have a lot of cool things we're going to be doing today. And when I mean a lot, I mean it's just going to be pretty much just one thing mainly. And if you can't tell by the title, I'm doing everything, Promise Neverland. That's going to be the theme for today, Promise Neverland. I'm going to be splitting this up into three main things, mainly two main things, and I have a little something in the middle for you guys to digest a little bit about. But you know, before I get into how this episode's going to be going down, let me explain to you what you're listening to around. You're listening to Weebcast, number one anime and manga show around, which you can listen to on pretty much any major podcasting platform there's out there. And you can listen to me on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, iHeartRadio, Overcast, wherever you get like me to. You can leave and listen to me on Anchor if you so well please. But I like to go through each week. I like to do something different, whether I have a guest, I'm going through the news, and we have a topic, talk about an anime, or whether you just get me and you just get C-Dub himself, and he gets to talk the news with you. Do a topic, talk an anime, and I kind of give just my personal thoughts and feelings today. And that's what this episode is going to be about. It's going to be everything Promise Neverland. And I'm going to be talking about, season one of Promise Neverland, and I'm going to kind of get you prepped and ready for season two, when that airs in January of 2021. And then I'm going to go right into, I'm going to talk about a little about the Amazon series. The Amazon Prime live action series and why I think it could be a great thing. And then lastly, I'm going to talk about the Promised Neverland ending, because it has ended. And by the time this episode comes out, it's going to be at least 3 weeks, I believe, since the manga has ended. And I'm going to be talking about my thoughts, not sure if they're controversial or not. And I've hinted at this in previous episodes before. So if you guys have been listening carefully over these last few weeks, then you probably know what my feelings on the ending. And I might have even talked about it on Twitter, I believe. You're going to hear my thought. I'll give you a little taste that I'll talk about the downfall of the manga. I'll leave it at that. But for now, we're going to get right into the show. Because I definitely want to start. I definitely want to get you guys caught up for season two on this very, very good, very entertaining show, Promised Neverland. And basically give you what you need to know for you. So when the second season comes out next year, January 2021 is, less than a half a year away, to be honest, or just about half a year away. But I have a little rundown for the anime's first season and what we can expect season two based on the manga. Like I said, everything in this episode, since it's about Promised Neverland, it's going to be spoilers. So for those anime watchers, who have just seen the first season, and those from the manga who have seen around where the first season kind of ends in the manga, this first half of the podcast is for you. Definitely stick around. I'll go through the plot of the first season and what we can expect in season two and how I think that'll proceed. Definitely stick around for that. When I get into the second half of the episode, of the podcast, of the show, when I talk about the manga, I'm going to talk about the ending. So you might want to dip out for that. Catch up on the manga, which you can read on Shonen Jump's app. You can read it on the app and you can read it online for free. At least the last chapter. I know you can read the last chapter for free as well. But if you subscribe to Shonen Jump, which I highly recommend that you do, you can read every single chapter on there digitally. But I guess I should start with the plot. So I'll start with the plot. In 2045, a group of orphans are raised at Gracefield House by a caretaker. The children study hard, they eat well, and they live pretty much happy lives. While the children are happy and consider each other family, they still look forward to the day that they are adopted. One by one, the children are adopted and never seen again. One night, two of the children, Emma and Norman, chase after one of the adopted children and find out the sinister reality about their adoption. That they're not being adopted at all. They're actually being eaten by demons. The shocking truth leads them to basically concoct this plan to escape Gracefield and the demons that want to eat them. In a nutshell. I want to do for the characters. There are a lot of characters in the series, but I'll focus on just on the main ones and the ones that the series focus on the most. And I'll just do the three main characters. Emma. Emma is considered the main protagonist of the story. She's extroverted. She's very caring. More athletically inclined than the other two main characters that I'll go over. And she's quite the motherly figure towards the younger children due to the fact that she helps watch over the children in Gracefield. And she's really kind of a goofball as well. She could be serious at times, but she definitely has a really goofy side to her as well. Norman, another secondary main character. He's the opposite. He's of Emma, at least. Very introverted, calculative, a math prodigy. He unfortunately suffers from a weak immune system, and so which gets him very sick very often. But that doesn't stop him from planning out his victories, delicately and stuff. And what he lacks in the physical capabilities, he makes up for in his supreme strategies. But he's very hard-headed, and he's always determined to see his plans through, even if it costs him dearly. And the third character I really wanted to talk about real quick, it was Ray, another secondary main character. He's similar to Norman and being introverted and calculative, but Ray is more sociable, and he's witty, a tad cynical, and Ray really has no issue with speaking his mind and letting other people around him have, pretty much given it to them when he deems necessary. Especially when other characters put themselves in danger, Ray's there to speak up about it. And he's always looking out for people. And he's really selfless, to be honest. You could tell that. I'll get into that as well as later. But he's always thinking about what's best for others. But season one, because I want to get into season one. Because in the first season, we're introduced to Gracefield House. And there's 38 children and the caretaker, Isabella. The children live happily, they seem to be living pretty happily in the orphanage. They eat well. They play a lot. They have great relationships with one another. However, through all this, they still have the dream, the hope to be adopted eventually into a loving home. But one night, a child is adopted, and I think the child goes by Connie, and she leaves her bunny behind. And Emma takes it upon herself to deliver it to Connie, even though she's not really allowed to leave the house. Norman follows her. And when Norman and Emma arrive at the gates of hell of Gracefield, almost called it hell. That was really weird, but they notice a cart. And they look inside and they find that it's Connie's fresh corpse. And Emma and Norman, they see demons come out and talk about the quality of Connie's corpse. And the duo here realizes that the adoption is just a euthanism for death. They make it back to Gracefield. And right then and there, they're already planning their escape into the unknown and escape from Gracefield House. Ray figures out the duo's hiding something from him. And he eventually manages to get them to tell the truth, so Ray can also help plan the escape. And in planning the escape, it proves to be a little more difficult than what the trio expected, obviously. You know, Isabella is under the suspicion that a group of the children know the truth, and brings in Sister Crone and to help the children from escaping. The children then find out that in addition to the numbers tattooed on their necks, they also have trackers in their ears. And the children begin to use playtime as a means to unknowingly prepare the children for the escape in the future. But, you know, however, Sister Crone joins in and manages to catch everyone, practically everyone except Norman and Ray. And this raises suspicions amongst the trio. Given the fact that they all have trackers, Sister Crone should have found all the children with no problem. Therefore, the trio concludes that there's somehow, somewhere within the close-knit group, that a traitor, someone is within the group. And Norman kind of lays out this trap to catch the traitor. And this includes telling two other children, I believe Dawn and Gilda, about the demons and using them as informants to catch the traitor. It is revealed, though, to be Ray who reveals he only did it because he knew the truth long before Emma and Norman. And he wanted to live as long as he could. So he cut a deal with Isabella and became an informant in order to survive. And I believe right after that, Norman convinces Ray to switch sides. And help with their plans to escape. Now, moving on, Emma, I think that's then the next big thing, I guess you could say, is Emma finds a book and that it talks about bunkers on the outside for humans escaping the farms. And Norman and Ray about, and he tells Norman and Ray about it. Dawn and Gilda begin to sneak around the house and find the toys that belong to the adopted children. And the two realize that their friends were killed. Dawn and Gilda join the trio in their plan to escape the house. However, Sister Crone, you know, Sister Crone always has her own agenda, and she wants to become the main caretaker and proposes alliance with the group. And I thought this was really cool. I don't know if you want to call it a twist, but I do thought it was an unlikely moment and something I didn't expect. And it's really cool to see someone of her age to be conspiring with these orphans like this. But I think Isabella finds out about Crone's double cross and quickly disposes her. She even then tells Ray that their agreement is off the table, thus splitting off that you know the informant and relationship he had with Isabella, and then Gracefield House's operations. And then she pretty much just breaks Emma's leg and ships Norman out for adoption. So two months after Norman was adopted, Ray and Emma remain in completely devastated states. Their plans failed. Norman was put out for adoption. And now Ray is going to be shipped out for adoption as well. But however, Emma and Ray haven't given up on escaping just quite yet. Because before Ray is scheduled to leave, Emma reveals that she had Dawn and Gilda plan, you know, prepare for their escape because Isabella was too focused on her and Ray. Emma also reveals that she changed the plan only to have the 15 older children escape because they're at higher risk of being adopted than the younger children. And then proceed to take out the caretaker, take out their trackers, set Gracefield on fire, and make Isabella think the demon's next meal, you know, in the demon's next meal, Ray died in the fire. Meanwhile, the older children make their escape, leaving the young ones behind, and they vow to return to them in 3 years' time. It was crazy first season. This episode isn't really such a review of the first season, but I did want to just at least give you on the rundown on what kind of happens in the first season. And since season one ends with the children escaping Gracefield, it is safe to assume that the next season is going to start with the aftermath of those actions. They are also in uncharted territory now. And so this next season is going to be full of surprises for the characters and the viewers alike. What we know is that the manga depicts the children facing off against some interesting characters, learning about the outside world and then the history of the world that they live in. I'm pretty sure season two is confirmed to have 24 episodes. But besides that, there's very little information as to what studio will adapt these 24 episodes to screen. When that information comes, I'm definitely going to have to talk about it in a future episode because I'm interested in it. Because I really quite liked the animation of the first season. But I'm definitely not adverse to another studio pick up in the second season and see it in a different style. Because I've already talked about it in a previous episode in my Spy Family Volume 1 review. And I talked a little about the Attack on Titan and its final season being done by Studio MAPPA instead. So it could be a good thing. You know, I don't want people to be scared of seeing a different animation for a beloved anime like this. But where can you watch this? Where can you watch season one of Promised Neverland? It's really easy to watch Promised Neverland. Like I said, it's only 12 episodes, and you can find it on, I watched it on Hulu, but you can find it on Hulu, Crunchyroll, Verb, Funimation, and Netflix in Thailand, I believe. And also, I'm pretty sure you can watch it on Toonami as well if you have cable. I almost forgot about that. Now onto something that's a little more divisive. At least we're going to start and get into more divisive territory, at least, is what I probably should say. And that's going to be the Amazon's Promised Neverland live action series and why I think it could possibly be great. Now, when you hear anime and live action, the usual reactions, negative and very little positivity in it. Usually the ugh or the why. Or no one's gonna watch that shit, that kind of thing. But both Variety and Deadline reported, I believe, June 10th, earlier this month, that Amazon may be planning the Promised Land live action series. And whatever your opinion on the enterprise may be, this is undoubtedly big news. Because Kalu Shirai's and Pasuka Demizu's fantasy thriller series has been a phenomenal success for Weekly Shonen Jump. And now one of the biggest companies in the world is taking interest. Yet for many fans, like I said, there's going to be a lot of trepidation for this. Which is undoubtedly and entirely understandable. We've had our hands burned so many times over and over again, years after years of subpar animations and disrespectful approaches And one of the most recent examples that comes to mind is, and I mean not for myself, I will say this for others, because it's just from what other people I've talked to on the show and not on the show. The most recent example is Netflix 2016 Death Note movie starring William Dafoe's Ryuk, which completely, I will say, even and for someone who's thought the movie was somewhat of enjoyable, one to watch, it completely missed the point of Tsugumi Oba's and Takashi Obata's original story and transformed it into pretty much an edgy teen romance drama. But the Promised Neverland live series could be actually different. And I'm going to tell you why right now. Pasuga Demuzu's realistic aesthetic. One of the reasons why many, including myself, lament the Western media industry's constant obsession with producing live action adaptation is because not everything works in that medium. For example, another series in development is the live action series for Eiichiro Oda's One Piece. The prospect of trying to convert Oda's wild, cartoonish action to the real world doesn't exactly fill me with too much excitement. To use a famous phrase, the medium is the message. Nevertheless, the leap from manga to live action could be made easier in the case of The Promised Neverland just because of its realistic aesthetic. Of course, there are things that appear in this series that aren't real, such as monsters and demons, but artist Demizu's style, on the whole, could be described as realistic. As a result, the more realistic design of the series world and action and characters could work quite well in live action. The next reason why I think a live action adaptation of The Promised Neverland could work is because of The Promised Neverland's mainstream appeal. And if we look at this from a business point of view, it already makes sense for Amazon to turn The Promised Neverland into a live action series. One of the reasons why adaptations are so prevalent in film and TV industries across the world is precisely because they have a proven track record. And presenting less of a risk for a studio or an investor. And in this sense, The Promised Neverland is an obvious choice. Not only has it surpassed 20 million volume sales in Japan, its English volume regularly enters in the top 20. But The Promised Neverland is suited for live action in more ways than simply for profit. In fact, there has always been a strong similarity between author Shirai's story and the king of young adult novels that are found in the West. A strong female protagonist, kids fighting against evil adults, overthrowing the old system and replacing it with a new one. You starting to see what I'm getting at? Anyone who has any experience with these young adult novels will know what I'm talking about. And, you know, and I don't envy them. Nor would I be the first one to make, you know, would I be, I'm obviously I'm not the first one to make that point. But no doubt Amazon is fully aware of these two facts alone. Its mainstream appeal and how realistic it's drawn and how seriously the subject matter is taken. Nevertheless, these two points prove that if it executed right, this could be actually something special and can set the pace and set the turn to adapt certain series with a closer eye and start adapting series similar to Promised Neverland and start, you know, right, you know, start critically thinking about which series need to be live actioned. All I'm saying, I think it could be something special. Or at the very least, I think it'll be better than the Netflix's Death Note. At least.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, to your favorite, the absolute best do so say myself, the one and only Weebcast, the number one anime and manga show on the internet. And here is your host with the most, C-Dub. Make sure you guys stand up and hit that Weebcast salute. God damn, that feels good. It feels good. Welcome to the other half of my Promised Neverland episode. In the beginning, I talked a little bit about just the first season and what do you guys need to know to get ready for yourselves in January 2021 when the second season of Promised Neverland drops on everybody and astonishes people. And I kind of went over the plot. I went over the characters. God damn it, I even went over the events of season one in a pretty, I'd say, in a pretty detailed way, if I do so say myself. Shit, I'm pretty sure I even let you guys know where you guys can watch it. And if you didn't, let me remind you guys, it's only 12 episodes. Real easy grind. Ain't nothing too heavy. You guys can get it through easily, super easily. And the episodes run by super fast. It's just one of those shows where you watch one or two and you're kind of just on a roll. And it's simply amazing. And another show that kind of does that, and I think that show doesn't go live, but I talk a little bit about this when in my Bakano kind of episode, which you'll probably be seeing that next Friday, actually. And I got an awesome guest with that, a very awesome German guest, and we're gonna talk some all things Bakano, but we don't have to talk about that right now because we're talking about Promised Neverland. And where you can watch that, all 12 episodes of the first season on Hulu, Crunchyroll, Verve, Funimation. I'm pretty sure it's being dubbed, and pretty sure you can watch it on Toonami as well. I watched it on Funimation now, which I still think is probably one of the better anime streaming services right out right now. I love it so much. But on the second half, I also talked about the Amazon Prime series, live action series, and I talked about how that I think it could actually be a really good series. And I talked about three or two major things, why I think it could be a success, you know. And real quick, I think the authors, Posuka's realistic aesthetic in the show, and the mainstream appeal, those two things, I think lend itself to a very, very good live action, production. Would I put money on it? See, that's another conversation. You're gonna have to speak privately with me about that one. But I want to get into a little bit about the manga. And this is not really going to be a manga review, because you probably, by this time, I think when this episode drops, it's already been about almost a month since, or getting close to a month since the manga's ended. And you don't need me to review the manga for you. There's a lot of people out there already doing that. And so you could probably hit me up on Twitter if you want to find that out, who's doing those things. I just want to talk about, at least on this second half, is something I've been feeling over the last year or so. It hasn't been a year, I guess. It's been about less over the last 8 months, 7 months of me reading Promised Neverland and noticing this decline in just quality, energy, and just the inconsistencies and indecision in their final stretch. I'm not sure how much I talked about it on Twitter. I may have posted it once or twice because I really don't like the... I don't bash things just for no reason. You know, I'm not anti-Twitter. I just don't say things are goat. I don't say things are trash just for the funds of it. If I'm going to call something pretty trash, best believe there was a damn good reason why. And if I'm going to say something's goat, you best believe I got pages. I got 9-10 pages in the back with information and reasons why. But hashtag Detective Conan still the GOAT. Hashtag One Piece still top 30 though. But moving on. Moving on. Kaiju, Shirai's, and Posica Demitsu's Promised Neverland came to an end, obviously, as you all know, in Weekly Shonen Jump about 3 weeks ago. And after 181 chapters, about 20 collected volumes, and so far one anime series, and 4 years of serialization. I think about 4 years. It's crazy to think about. This has only been serialized for 4 years. The story of Emma and Norman and the children of Gracefield has simply awed and inspired millions of fans across this world. But the Promised Neverland ending has not been greeted with universal acclaim. In reality, a sign of a series' slow decline over many years. Like I said, this side of the show will have contained a little bit more spoilers, because I will not be talking about events just from the anime, but events from the manga. So you are warned right here. Do I have to play a bell or sound? Production, can you put a sound or something? Yeah. Thank you. Did that work? Hell if I know. In any case, there will be no doubt some out there who enjoyed The Promised Neverland and its ending, and will love the series with all their, you know, with all their heart. To those people, we say, you know, to the people here at Weebcast, as I look to nobody, as I look to myself, great. Love what you love. And don't let anybody tell you otherwise. Changing your opinion just because someone disagreed with you is the worst form of peer pressure. And that isn't something I want to encourage. But, I still think there are several problems with Promised Neverland. Not only with this, just the series, but with its ending. That are worth spotlighting. Especially at the higher ups over at Shueisha. No doubt, look to repeat its success. Perhaps the main problem stems from the simple fact that the series was so good at the beginning. Instead of bowing to industry pressure and conforming to the usual battle manga formula, it really stuck to its guns and delivered a mystery thriller story with just a hint of horror that made it stood out among the crowded shonen landscape. This was what garnered a lot of attention for the series upon its debut, but also bound to make all subsequent arcs look bad in comparison. Nevertheless, The Promised Neverland's gradual decline was not an inevitability. You know, nothing really ever is, but I can still kind of point to some of the key moments in the story's progression that I felt was instrumental in kind of bringing this disappointing end that we read. And I'm going to start with the issue of Norman's redemption. See, this was sort of bound to happen eventually. Given the series' young demographic, but the fact that the character simply return to normal following the climax of the Imperial Capital battle arc always struck me as anticlimactic, you know. And instead of dealing with the implications of the character's previous turn towards villainy, the story simply preferred to discard them outright. Another mistake was, I thought in my mind, was that it focused too much on the demon characters and left the human characters out of the picture for a little too long. And again, this was bound to happen again, because the story, how it naturally was tending towards answering some of the questions of the audiences that they've been, you know, questioning for a while. You know, how does this world function? How did this social structure, how did this world came to be as it is? But there was definitely too much of emphasis on court intrigue and inter-clan politics in the run-up and the during of the Imperial Capital battle arc. And I should say, just for posterity, that not everything following the series' bombastic beginning was flawed or inherently flawed. Indeed, you know, indeed, the Search for Minerva arc was just as wonderfully fraught with tension and well thought out discovery as the initial jailbreak one. And the Goldie Pond arc was, I thought, was a magnificent evolution of the series' initial conflict. But it is hard to describe the series as a success when only some of its arcs were worthwhile. But here, I'll return to the Promised Neverland's ending proper, though. Nailing the ending is perhaps the one of the most important things to any story, in any genre, and any on any medium. And without a proper, fulfilling ending, everything that came before it, you know, can seem a tad fruitless or pointless. In this sense, although the series' prior failures are important, the arcs leading directly to the series' ending are worth focusing on just as much. The Return to Gracefield arc should have been, by all accounts, should have been the series' like victory lap. And I kind of want to, I'm trying to think of one of the chapters that kind of brought that in there. Because what was that chapter? Do I have that written down, actually? Promised Neverland, chapter 167. And it was one of the first chapters, it was one of the few chapters that I was highly anticipating, the Return to Gracefield. I thought it would be something that would rival its the early success that Promised Neverland had. And the series at the time was performing well around that one chapter, chapter 167 time. In regards to storytelling, at that time, there was really no other better time to pick up and catch up to Promised Neverland. Because it was just entering its, it was getting closer to the final arc. And by chapter 167, we were kind of seeing how much potential that final arc is going to cement this series up upon one of the shonen, you know, one of the weekly Shonen Jump greats, you know. Because we just before that, you know, before the Return of Grace, the Gracefield, we learned a few chapters back before that Peter Rattray was like holding all the various farm escapees captive at the Gracefield house, Emma and friends, and make that daring decision to take over their old home. And they use all the intelligence and cunning that marked them as a high-grade meat in the first place in their battle against demons, and eventually leading them into a dead end where they overwhelm them all at once. And just seeing the kids outsmart the demons in that chapter 167, despite their comparative lack of numbers and physical weakness, was a joy to see. And it fit nicely with the series' overall theme with the kids versus adults, and it could make the live action series great, because we've seen that theme in Western movies and comics for decades. And why it seems to have such an appeal over in America, this show and the manga. But you know, that wasn't the only thematic parallel in that chapter. You know, returning to where it all started, the Gracefield house. For the end, you know, it's a classic narrative structure. But it works well. I thought it worked well in that chapter, in that case. Especially considering we haven't seen them in such a setting for such a long time at that point. You know, seeing Emma and his friends grown up in their childhood home, in turn, showed us how far they've come since that great beginning. Nevertheless, you know, the games of the tag, they played as kids, initially for fun, but eventually for escape training, still came in handy. You know, just kind of spelling out some of that thematic parallels in that Return to Gracefield, you know, as we, you know, it was delivering some good action, which made that chapter 167 so entertaining, you know, and just the why that Return to Gracefield arc as a whole was entertaining. You know, I mean, the jury is out for the for those last two arcs, you know, the seven wall, that's the other arc I was going to do other than the Imperial Capital Battle arc and the seven walls arc, you know, I kind of found myself, and I'm going to talk a little bit about that a little bit later, but those arcs were a little bit boring, a little bit of a snooze fest. Look, I hate to sugarcoat things, and I'm not gonna start now. Because like I said, they focus a little too much on the politics of the demon world and Norman's redemption. And I mean, it was obvious from the very beginning that Norman would eventually come back to the light. And I think I don't think that was the case. I don't think anybody was shocked by that. You know, Emma's always right, stringing out the drama for so long. Then. Wasn't maybe exactly a good move. The Return of Gracefield was supposed to be a victory lap. Not only was it just the final confrontation between the kids and the demons, it was just a nice return to the series' place of origin in the form of Gracefield House. But if you were also expecting a return to form, and to form the greatness and what made this manga so great in the beginning, then you're going to be a little bit disappointed. You know, I thought, and I think you could be objectively disappointed about it. And I think one of the problems started when it became clear that Peter Rattray, after so many chapters of buildup, so many chapters of interference, wasn't really quite as threatening as he might have once appeared. Kind of a wet bag. You know, instead of acting like that sinister mastermind we thought, he really came across as a sniveling crybaby. And who fled at the first sign of danger. And Emma was able to defeat him kind of with incredible ease, you know? As he simply killed himself once it became clear that he can no longer win. And that's not even the biggest problem. If I had to rank these. Because by far the biggest problem, I think, came in chapter 178. And if it wasn't already obvious enough that The Promised Neverland was shaping up for a disappointing ending, then this chapter made it crystal clear. And let me not. I'm gonna diverge a little bit in here. It's crazy how many sports. How many connections to the world you can make with sports, because sports is a lot, especially the major sport leagues. Since it's based on just skill and on a certain meritocracy. People show their true colors a lot easier. Excuse me. And you can see signs of when a team, I was like, oh, that they're not going to do so well in the playoffs. Or, you know, the way they're playing right now, that's not going to be very fruitful for them near the end of the season, things like that. There's always signs that leads up very small, almost some of them clearer than others, that kind of show themselves in flashes. And, you know, things can be going well, and then there's little oopsie. But people write those off just because it was predicated with, it was good things came before it, and so they just kind of write it off. But that's the point I'm trying to make with chapter 178, because as it turned out, Emma had to give nothing in exchange for a new promise with him. despite many chapters of build-up and tension surrounding that very question. This was quite rightfully a cop-out. Let me dig a little deeper in that. Chapter 178, right? Is that what I said? And I hate to continue with the negativity, but I'm not going to make no attempt to hide my distaste for the direction of the series especially at that time. I should have tweeted a little bit more about it, but I wanted to be quite sensitive on it, you know. Because this chapter just kind of proved my point in the declined quality significantly over the last year and a half in that series. But this chapter definitely took the biscuit on this one. And let me just get into the chapter. I got a little upset. In chapter 178, we had a semblance of drama as Mon was attacked by a vengeful demon and subsequently died. But if you thought this was unexpected twist of fate may carry over into this week's chapter, then you'd be surely mistaken. Because here, the author, Kaiyu Shirai, returns to the question of Emma's new promise with the mysterious him. That has been hanging over the series ever since the Seven Walls arc, I believe. What might she have to give in return for a family safe passage to the human world? Her life? Her soul? Her ability to perform alchemy? To take a leaf from Full Metal Alchemist book? Nothing. None of those three. Because it was absolutely nothing. Nothing at all. See, and the kid's reaction to Emma's declaration that there will be absolutely no price from them using the passageway that links the demon world and the human worlds perfectly sums up my own complete and utter incredulation as the mystery that's been hanging over the series for years now effectively comes to nothing. It came to nothing. And what was the point of building it up so much if it was ultimately pointless? The fact that the passageway conveniently lies under Grace Fieldhouse almost feels inconsequential in the face of this. You know, and of course, I don't mean to discount the pressures of acting upon the series creators. I can't even begin to imagine how stressful it is to sketch out a satisfactory ending to a series loved by millions. You can make the argument that stretching out things any further by way of a tangent exploring the consequences of the promise would only create more frustration, and especially as the magazine has announced multiple times that the series was entering its final stages when chapter 178 came out. I don't know. And the thing is, I thought, you know, following chapter 178, I thought we would get some short snippets of what life is like in the human world as the kids wake up on the beach of a city, and it kind of resembled New York. But like I said, I think I wasn't going to hold my breath about it. The series betrayed my expectations way too many times, even before 178 was dropped. And I just kind of kept trudging forward on that one. And that's why I call it the cop out, you know. I wanted to bring that. And the thing is, although the subsequent chapters walked, you know, this development back, the damage was already kind of done. Even if Emma had forced to sacrifice the memories of her family, after all, this felt like more of a technicality than a planned development. And the Promised Land's final chapter, 181, then doubled down yet again by having Norman and company meet Emma in the human world. Certainly, the fact that she lost her memories will mean that they will have to start from square one. But the Promised Neverland's ending still essentially resets the status quo. Everyone is happy. And that's the end. The big problem with the Promised Neverland's ending is that it's lacking in pathos and payoff. And not only did everyone get what they want, they managed to do so without sacrificing anything in the process. Apart from characters like Hugo, of course, but the series' ending is also marked by the chronic indecision and inconsistency. One minute Emma has to sacrifice nothing, but then she has to sacrifice everything. Whether or not this was a conscious reaction to the fan backlash by the author, Shirai is, I have no idea. I can't really speak to that. But seems unlikely given the chapters are prepared several weeks in advance, though. But in any case, the Promised Neverland's ending and what it means for just weekly Shonen Jump. Yes, it's left some fans bitterly disappointed, such as myself. It also serves as like an encapsulation of the series' decline over the years, as I explained. Contained with several key problems, as I outlined before this. And on this basis, is it really fair to describe the series as one of Weekly Shonen Jump's best? Is it really as good as Death Note, Madoka Box, or Assassination Classroom? That last example is kind of particularly salient as it shows us to how to execute a good ending. Stick to your guns and have your characters lose something in order to succeed. Even though the ending was obvious from the very beginning, it worked because it had pathos and consistency. And where does this leave Weekly Shonen Jump? Not only has it lost another one of its popular series, it also provides several key lessons for the magazine. Namely, don't let a series so focused on the story and narrative decline in terms of story and narrative. but that such series can succeed if they have potential. And the key challenge in breaking away from the battle manga formula, however, is maintaining a degree of quality and consistency. In any case, The Promised Neverland has now ended. This is far from what we'll see of Kaiyu Shirai and Posuka Demizu series. Not only is the second season anime on its way, like I said, we're also getting a live-action movie and TV series. And there were also several exciting projects announced in this week's... I think it was that week's issue of Weekly Shonen Jump, including a game with designs penned by the series artist, Demizu. You can read, calm down, Chris. But you can read The Promised Neverland and its ending for free on Viz Media's Shonen Jump service, my favorite manga service app ever. It's the Viz Media series. You can read all your favorite weekly Shonen Jump manga on there with a low, low subscription cost. And you get free chapters. So what's better than that? But thank you for listening to me rant and rave. Mostly a little bit rant on The Promised Neverland. Because it was a series fraught with so many good ideas from the beginning. And being executed so well in story, narrative, and characters. And then over time, especially in the last year and a half, be fraught with so many weird decisions and inconsistencies that kind of just had a long, steady decline that led to a very disappointing ending. And I hope it just serves as an example for Weekly Shonen Jump books currently being... in serialization right now. And I hope it's an example to some of the few of the long running mangas in Weekly Shonen Jump right now. As I look to One Piece and series of that length in Weekly Shonen Jump. The stick to your guns. And keep doing what works, you know. You know, they obviously the authors have the full discretion. And, you know, most of the time they know what people want. Sometimes they have to sacrifice that for things that for different creative things, the things that they want to add for different plot devices and things of that nature. But the fans hold a lot of power. Readers hold a lot of power, and they know what they want. They know what's good. They know what entertains them. So, you know, Promised Neverland is a caution story for a lot of authors and a lot of for mangakas and for series out there right now, long or short. And I hope we don't see. I don't see something like this crystal clear decline in a series like this again. There are a few series, and I'm not gonna talk about them here because this is a Promised Neverland thing. But there are some series out there right now that I've been reading that has also been declining in the last month, in the last 6 or 5 months. Which isn't a rare thing to see. It happens. But once it gets to this 5-6 month stage where it kind of seems in that kind of weary, that kind of grayish area where you're like, you know, I'm not really, nothing exciting, no new energy, not stick, you know. I get a little worried. I do get a little worried. But I think that's another story for another episode. Thank you, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, for hopping up on this episode of Weebcast, the number one anime and manga show all around with your host with the most, C-Dub. Hope you guys enjoyed this Promised Neverland episode. Share it with your friends and family, anyone who likes anime and manga and wants to hear some black kid talk about online in a podcast format. Let them know. Tell them where you can find it. Tell them how you're listening to it. Whether you're listening to Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, iHeartRadio, Spotify, so many places you can listen to the Weebcast podcast. And all those links can be found whether on my Twitter. You can find them on my Twitter or my Twitter link where you can listen to it right from Anchor as well or any other podcasting site that they offer. Thank you for allowing my voice into your ears, into your homes. Hope you guys have a lovely day. Also, I should add, before I leave, make sure you guys consider becoming a Weebcast supporter. And becoming a Weebcast supporter would help not only me, but the show greatly to improve in guests and quality. You can easily by doing that by going to anchor.fm/Weebcast/support. And by doing that, you can donate however much. You can donate $1, $5, $10 to the Weebcast to support this show and improve this show. It'll be greatly, 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 greatly appreciated. You will be shouted out on Weebcast as well. You can plug whatever you want on the show. Just let me know if you do decide to become a supporter. Let me know what you want plugged, and I'll definitely do that for you. Not a problem. I'll sing to high heavens for you because I love y'all that fucking much. But yes, thank you for allowing my voices into your ears and into your homes. I will be seeing you guys next week with some cool things. I got a lot of cool shows lined up. Like I said, next Friday, I got a guest from Germany. And we're going to be talking about one of my favorite shows of all time, Bakano. So be ready for that conversation, because that was a hell of a fun one to do. Great dude, great show. What could be better than that? I'm also going to be doing. Also got a Chris's, you know, C-Dub's Manga Corner is coming back. I don't know if I want to do that before next Friday. Or the next Friday after that, but I'm gonna be talking about some cool things I'm gonna be talking about some manga in the latest magazine that you guys need, probably would just want to check out. Some funny things. Most of it's funny. I will get that. But don't worry. I'll get all to that. Just be on the lookout for that. I got a Bakano episode. I got another Manga Corner episode coming up. And also, I'm going to be doing some more. I got some more just centric manga volume reviews as well. And if you got any recommendations or anime or manga you want me to watch and review, just hit me up on Twitter. On twitter.com. / JXNMORI. Hit me up there. But yes, it's been great, lovely talking to you guys. We shall meet again. This is your boy C Dub, and I'm out of 3000.